All right, welcome back. My name's Adrian.
My name is Aaron.
This is To Teach One.
To Teach One. I don't know, do you like that? I just started doing it a couple episodes ago.
I know, and it's just carried on, and now I anticipate it. Because the look on your face also is...
To Teach One.
It's worth it.
Yeah,
it's definitely worth it.
It's a little trademark thing, so...
Absolutely.
Hope everybody's doing great.
Yeah, absolutely. How's everything been going since the last one?
Good. I was able to run a little bit last weekend. I was able to run this week. Knee is doing well, so I'm looking forward to the marathon next weekend. Going to do the half marathon. It's going to be a blast.
Fantastic. Yeah, I mean, I think that's an opportunity to just talk about what we did last episode. We talked about a few things.
Yeah.
It's spring. Sex is in the air. I just feel like, you know, males and females are looking at each other like, yeah.
Yeah, it's the time of year.
You. It's on.
Yeah.
I don't know. Or maybe I'm wrong.
Or maybe it's just us. No, but I'm pretty sure it's everybody. I've kind of felt it. I mean, you know?
Yeah.
It's one of those things. You know, it's like we talked about, right? So we're basically chipmunks with like really good brains and, you know, thumbs. So seasons affect us just like they do any other animal. And this is the season for, you know, making new people.
Yeah. It's, you know, everything's... Yeah. It's a season, the renewal season?
The renewal, the spring renewal. Yes, yeah. The vernal equinox, if you will.
Exactly.
Yeah, and it's, well, you know, and it's also the season of rebirth and the sense of everything's new and fresh and blooming. And,
I know, yeah. I know. I just had to save a baby bunny from being eaten by my best friend's cat yesterday.
Bro-bro? Yeah.
Yeah, bro-bro. He's a beast. He just, you know, he just does what comes naturally.
Every time I see a picture of him, he looks very regal. It's a very regal-looking cat.
Dude, he's a top cat, man. That dude. Anyway,
yeah.
Long story short. So yeah, we talked about you know, sex and nutrition, just kind of the stuff that we have going on in our lives, right?
Sure. And the dangerous time of year it is for people who suffer from addiction.
That's absolutely true, especially alcoholics. I've heard a lot of stories of people that, you know, just found, you know, face down in the middle of their living room, not dead,
right?
Just passed out.
Yeah.
It's not a good sign. Face down in the middle of the living room.
Never a good sign.
That's your sign.
It really is.
The wheels have fallen off.
The first time I ever woke up like on the kitchen floor, right? It should have been a signal. Like if you just like passed out on your way to get another beer and you're just laying in the kitchen. Yeah.
Not good.
You would have thought that would have jogged something in me, but nah, it took another 15, 20 years.
Yeah, it's definitely a sickness.
Absolutely.
All right, so good to hear you're just about ready for marathon. That's coming up real quick. If you want to listen to that episode, you can find us on our website. That's www.toteachone. That's 2TACH1.com.
To Teach One.
You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram at TWOTEACHONE. And if you know, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, yeah, wherever you listen to your podcast, just type in the number 2 followed by TEACHONE. Again, that's number 2, TEACHONE. We're live, well, not live, but we publish another episode every other Thursday at this point.
Yeah.
Although we are thinking about
bumping it back up to every Thursday.
Yeah. As soon as we get caught up on some content, that's probably going to happen.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So what do we got going on today?
Well, you know, today we're going to talk about, you know, a subject that's kind of near, very near and dear to us. I mean, it's how we make our living. Mm-hmm. It's not everything about us, but it's definitely a big part of who we are, you know, because we're both in recovery.
Right.
And so are our guests. We're going to be talking about sobriety maintenance.
Right. Ooh, ooh.
What does that mean? You know, a lot of people have never even thought of those two words together.
Yeah.
Because most of the time when we talk about addiction or, you know, being in recovery, that kind of thing, the story, you know, the main part of the story that's told is that of, you know, it's the crash and burn.
In the initial recovery, right?
Right. And the initial recovery, right?
Yeah.
But there's, you know, so many layers. There's much more to
it,
right?
So much more.
You know, just because you're not physically addicted doesn't mean that you've, you know, fixed everything.
Well, exactly. And like, you know, you don't come out of 20 years of addiction with really good life skills. And so it takes a while, freed from the drug, to still work on yourself and work on skills that a lot of people picked up in their teenage years just through, you know, good parenting or good, you know, they didn't suffer from addiction, so they weren't kind of held back. And you may have to relearn that stuff. I know it was true for me.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I mean, it took a while. So, you know, beyond that first year, right, you're still learning a lot about yourself because now you're sober and now you can really dive into those things that you've been shoving deep down for decades.
Yeah, in for my sure. case. Yeah, and so here to help us kind of unpack what that looks like, we've got our two guests, one of which we has been around, you know, I've known him for, you know, a few years now. I've had the pleasure of knowing him. It's Brad Pitt. No, it's not Brad Pitt.
It's might as well be. I'm telling you, ladies. Man,
Yeah, he's got that haircut thing going and on the voice. Right now. You know, just
I kind of want to date him. I mean, I'm just saying.
I mean, I'll tell you just, right now, just based off of looks alone, okay?
Let's talk after the episode.
If I was attracted to men in that way.
Yes, exactly. That's what I mean.
Definite candidate.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
No one's trying to pass that up.
No. Not at all.
I'm like sweating. This is so
yeah,
awkward.
Yeah.
He has turned a different shade of red right now.
Yeah.
So we've got Brad. You know, if you want to get in touch with him, I'll just say this after the what was I going to say after the episode?
After the episode, when we do the description in the episode, you can contact us if you want to talk to Brad.
Through the website?
Because I'm sure, through the website.
Or DM us.
Yeah, he does work with newcomers and would be willing to speak with anybody who finds his story interesting and wanted to know more about him. Is that correct, Brad?
Absolutely. Yeah. Especially if somebody's like struggling at, you know.
Yeah.
I always tell people, like, if it's an emergency, call twice in a row, and I don't care if I'm in a meeting at work, I'll pick up the phone. So
yeah, because that's one of the, you know, it's funny because even though, like, three of us, because our other guest is our coworker, we all work with people who are new in recovery, but anybody who has any length of time in recovery will tell you that part of recovery is the willingness to work with anybody in new recovery.
Yeah,
especially.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's part of how we stay sober.
Yeah. We'll love you until you learn to love yourself.
Absolutely.
Amen, brother. Amen.
Absolutely. So, so you can get in touch with Brad through our website. That's www.TACH1.com. Or you can also DM us on Facebook and Instagram.
Yeah.
And our Facebook and Instagram handle is TWOTEACHONE. And we'll also include his information in the description, the episode description. So, I mean, it doesn't have to be the person that is actually actively in addiction. It could be that, it could be someone who's actively in addiction, or say you have a loved one and you're just trying to gain some kind of understanding. Because, I mean, I'll tell you right now, there's nothing sensible about addiction, right? And a lot of times our loved ones are just confused, like, what, who are you, first of all? Who's this person? And you know, what's going on? Right? So
absolutely, anybody.
Awesome, man. Thank you. Thank you for doing that. So that's Brad, and we have Dawn.
Yay.
What's up, Dawn?
Hi, I'm Dawn. I work with Adrian and Aaron. So I get that pleasure, and I am new to knowing pretty boy Brad over here.
Oh,
yeah. But he seems all right.
Yeah. So whereas
just all right.
He's okay. Right. But so whereas Adrian and I work at the men's component of the place where we work, Dawn runs the women's component.
Yeah, that's got to be, you know, really interesting. You know, it didn't take long for me to acknowledge the fact that males and females, you know, have some stuff to work through. And, you know, but the experience is also pretty different, you know, for females. Yeah, it was just interesting because I had the pleasure of sitting through some, you know, stories, life story, because, you know, where we work, we do this life story exercise. And I was just like, you know what? I think as guys, we need to just, like, you know, chill out. We've got our own problems, but man, it just, some of the stuff the women went through that some of the stuff I heard was difficult, man.
Yes.
Like, I don't even know how I don't know if I'd be here, man.
Yeah.
You know, it's really, really hard. So that's cool.
Good job.
I know, as guys work with the guys, there's a lot less drama over there.
Yeah. We have our own different set of, you know, issues.
Yeah.
It's just kind of funny, quick anecdote. Two of the guys walked in for the Thursday meeting and were immediately, the look on their faces, and I was like, what? And they were like, it smells like 20 dudes live here.
Oh, it does. It does. Yeah. Every time I go away for a couple of days, I walk back in and I'm like, yeah.
Yeah.
Then I think, yes, that it smells like a house of dudes, but I also think, do I carry that out of here with me when I go? You know what I'm saying?
I know, right? Yeah. Don, do we smell like that when we come visit?
I haven't noticed.
Okay, good.
You know,
okay,
but that's I don't get that close either. That's and a good you sign. Guys don't have to deal with 12 different women spraying perfume.
Ah, true.
That in a very true. Confined that's a space. Smelly van which is
on the way in.
Yeah.
It can be hard. Yes. It really can be a smelly van, especially when, like, sometimes the scents coalesce and they kind of work with each other.
Sometimes not.
Sometimes not at all.
Yep.
Yeah.
No. Actually, can I ask you a question before we really get started?
Of course.
After that intro, do you feel like sex is in the air from the woman's perspective? Because I'm eager to know if it's the reciprocal.
Well, I mean, yeah, you know, tell us, because I don't think I've approached anyone like, hey, sex in the air. I just feel
a random girl on the street. Hey, do you?
Yeah, because I'm not allowed to join the girls when they're doing their, you know, water cooler talk. I mean, I'm obviously with the guys at the gym, right? You know, right, I know what's going on over there and, you know, and everywhere else, right? But we don't get to just be like, hey, what's up? What are you guys talking about?
I think springtime, you know, I don't know that I would call it sex in the air, but I do think that I become at least a lot more aware, you know, aware of my surroundings, of what's going on. I think from a male perspective, it's kind of more women are dressing more scantily, you know, so everybody's in skirts and tank tops all of a sudden.
That could be
you know, part of it. Which isn't particularly a turn on for me. You know, I'm not like, look at that guy in those shorts. Ooh.
I guess not much changes for us. I mean, we might put on some shorts, you know, now that it's warm. And
stuff. Maybe. Maybe. Yeah, exactly.
But other than that.
You know, that's true. And it does go back to that adage, you know, especially when we talked about it at the gym, that men are looking, you know, for visual clues about women, whereas women aren't necessarily looking for that many visual clues. There's other things they're attracted to. So
it's interesting you say that you're more aware of your situation. Because, like, as we were talking about this, it's like, I can only imagine what it'd be like to be a woman where, like, you're walking around with something that every man wants.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. I get it. Yeah.
Like,
I have no idea.
I can't fathom what that's like, other than, like, carrying around, like, a backpack of 20 grand in a shitty neighborhood.
Yes.
With a sign.
You know what I mean?
It's right.
With a sign.
With a sign that says 20 grand.
Yeah. Right exactly. Here. Right. That's the equivalent of what a woman deals with every single day. Just walking around with a vagina. Like,
we should talk about that sometime.
That's an interesting discussion.
I think that's an interesting one, right? So anyway, let's we digress, right? Let's talk about the topic at hand, right? So we've all been through this journey of you know, basically self-discovery, mm-hmm. And all kinds of different experiences, you know, happen, I mean, take place within a year, especially, right? And we always talk about, oh, you know, there's this year, the year mark, it's spoken about quite often. You're not supposed to, you know, get into any relationships, not supposed to make any crazy, like, you know, permanent decisions, that kind of thing, right? Now, what's it like? Most people don't know what it's like, you know, past this year. A lot of people just understand that, you know, once you're not physically addicted, then, okay, cool, you're good to go. But that's not necessarily true. So let's talk about, you know, what's that experience, you know. But before that, you know, I think it's only right that we talk about what happened, you know, before, you know, this year mark, right? So how did it go for you?
Well, I started drinking really young. I think I was about 12 or 13. The first time I ended up getting really, really drunk. And I ended up kind of blacking out and peeing the bed and passing out and just terrifying my friend that I was with, you know, and I think to her that stopped her from drinking for a pretty long time. But for me, it was like I had found something, you know, like that just big, it made me fit and it made me kind of forget about my past and what made me uncomfortable in life. And it kind of made me feel very much like I could do anything and I don't have to think about, you know, all this bad stuff or just whatever made me not fit. And that pretty much continued through high school. I drank a lot and, you know, you hear a lot about people saying that drinking worked for them and then something happened and it didn't. For me, it never worked. It was just like a series of train wrecks. But I wouldn't let it go. You know, I went to the hospital a couple times for alcohol poisoning while I was in high school, and I was a pretty small girl, teenager, and they just couldn't understand how I could drink that much and not die. Like, they really were like, if you had one more shot or one more beer, you would be dead.
Wow.
And that didn't stop me either. You know, I just thought I overdid it, and I have to learn how to not overdo it next time.
Yeah.
And so that pretty much continued. It kind of went from bad to worse in my 20s. And I drank a lot. I started blacking out a lot, not remembering where I was, waking up not knowing where I was. You know, that dread, like, where's my phone? Where am I? Who's this? What's going on? How did I get here? And I started using a lot of drugs to kind of enhance my drinking, which caused me to have, like, multiple day blackouts a lot, just losing a lot of time.
Wow.
I would call it autopilot. You know, like, I had no idea what was going on. And I even remember once waking up in August, and I had no idea what happened in July. Like, I was baffled that it was August. And I was like, where did July go? And it just, you know, it kept just this downward spiral, got worse and worse. That's kind of in my 20s when I began to maintenance drink and just always have a bottle on me. And I would be even at a bar with friends drinking, you know, like, we're there to drink. And I would be drinking more in the bathroom, like, hiding, because it wasn't enough for me. And I just thought about it all the time. It was just a mental obsession.
Right.
When am I going to drink? Are they going to know I'm drinking? You know, I'm drinking through work. How much do I have left? Is it going to be there in the morning? It was just constant thoughts of alcohol. And then kind of in my 30s, my early 30s is when I ended up getting sober. And right before that is when it went from, like, worse to unlivable. I mean, my life was a disaster. I couldn't do anything anymore. I didn't even at this point think about stopping drinking anymore or trying to manage it or control it. It was just like, this is what I need to do. I have to do this.
Yeah.
and I ended up losing about 3 jobs in a row. I got kicked out of the place I was living. I had fallen a lot. I'd broken my nose. I mean, I kind of looked like a battered woman, but nobody ever hit me. Like, I would just drink so much that I would lose control of my body. And I thought that I drank because I was really depressed and I had a ton of anxiety and that it was self-medicating. And it just didn't occur to me that, you know, drinking a depressant alcoholically for 20 years would cause you to be depressed.
Right.
And have anxiety. You know, I was solving a problem with a problem. And I wasn't understanding why it wasn't getting better. I was throwing up blood and drinking cheap vodka. Oof. And just kind of falling apart. I couldn't eat, but I had gained like 40 pounds. I was super bloated.
What a weight.
Yeah. And I just wanted to drink. I wanted everybody to leave me alone, and I wanted to drink. And even, you know, getting kicked out of that place, I kind of squatted and wouldn't leave. But I even thought, you know, at that time, I'd gotten in a car accident drinking years before, and I just didn't get another car for like 8 years, you know, because I was too scared to drink and drive. And so I started thinking about being homeless, and like, maybe everybody would just leave me alone. And like, if I finally got out and I was just on the streets, and then I could just drink like I want to drink, and everybody could leave me alone. You know, so I look at it like I lost all these things due to my addiction, but when I'm looking back at it now, I think that I gave them all away. I gave everything up to hold this thing like so close to me that was just killing me and rotting me from the insides out. And then I ended up, my mom found out that, you know, my drinking had gotten really bad. She lives in Michigan, and some friends called her, and I ended up going to Michigan with her because she said I was coming there, or she was going to come to Colorado, and I didn't have anywhere for her to come. So I went to Michigan, and I ended up getting introduced to a recovery community there, and working with a counselor and going to therapy, and then moved back to Denver, and then just stayed really strong in that recovery community and continued counseling and things like that.
Wow, cool.
Yeah, thank you for sharing.
Yeah,
and absolutely. And
then you ended up where we work.
Correct.
Yeah. And for those of you, just a shout out, just to let you know how impressive Dawn is in person. I believe you were the first person hired by this organization to do your job that did not come directly from our program.
Yes.
Which, you know, is a rarity.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And definitely the first in, you know, in my time.
Yeah. Yeah. I think maybe ever.
I don't know that it's happened before.
And anybody who works at the girl's house is just a straight up gangster.
Yeah.
Yeah. She makes it seem, you know, easy, and You know, but I really appreciate what you said about how you do that, because, I mean, I think that's the reason why I've been able to survive there without, without really being scathed, you know, by some of the, some components of, you know, the work we do.
Right.
You know, there's this thing. So recently I was talking to my best friend, Jacob, right? The white shark. And I was like, you know what? I might actually need some like transitional, like, you know, therapy or something like that. And he was like, you know, that's completely normal because there's this thing called vicarious trauma, you know, because think about it. We're compared very close, you know, in some ways to, you know, first responders and that kind of thing, in that we deal with people at their absolute worst, right?
Right.
Now, we do get to see them, you know, heal, which is the best part of our job. But, right, you know, the energy that we have to deal with a lot of times, you know, it just isn't, you know, all that great, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so anyway, I think you do what you do pretty gracefully. And I just being there to understanding that what we do and enforcing the rules and that kind of thing, understanding that that is how it's important, because that's how they will be able to, you know, find their way out of, you know, where they're at.
Right.
I mean, at least in part, right? It's not the whole, you know, thing, but, you know, we're helping them by enforcing the rules the way they should be, because especially in my case, you didn't go through here, that organization, but I did, and, you know, my best, you know, some of the people I know did, and it worked for them.
Right.
You know, and knowing that, I'm just like, oh, easy. You know, all I have to do is maintain or improve on this if I can. And, you know, I'm good.
And
they're good.
Well, and it's, I like the recovery community that we're involved in stresses that too, in the sense that I want what this person over here has. I don't have it. So I'm going to stop doing things my way, because my way isn't working.
Right.
And I'm going to listen to some structure provided by somebody who has the experience, who's been through what I've been through. And so there's that. And I think you obviously had that in a strong way, because when you came in, you sort of already had that sense. Like, I had to develop it a little bit that, you know, enforcing the rules was not being mean.
Right.
It wasn't being awful to them. I'm actually helping them.
Right.
You know, and allowing somebody to just exist in a space and not grow is really putting their life in danger when we're dealing with what we deal with, you know, because we know about people who have passed away that we have worked with, you know, and this is a life and death situation. And so to allow somebody to not, you know, move on when you could provide the structure that will maybe push them in that direction is to really do them a disservice.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
it is. And, you know, like in the end of my drinking, I mean, I lived like an animal. I was like stuck in a room in the dark, in the basement, like peeing in mason jars, not leaving the house, not being able to hold a job, you know. And so I needed to have structure too, you know, and that's what I always tell them is I know, you know, if you've been smoking meth for 10 years, you don't think that doing the dishes is a big deal. But this is like transitioning you into the real world.
Right.
Because when you're deep in use, you know, you don't know how to be in the real world.
Yes.
And so our purpose here is not, you know, to be mean and make your bed.
Right.
It's to show you, you know, all these little steps that you can take to become a functioning member of society again.
Exactly.
And, you know, it can be a terribly heartbreaking job to have, and it can be hard.
Mm-hmm.
But also I think it's so rewarding, you know, and when I look at the bad things, you know, like when relapse happens and you're really worried about somebody, and especially women, you know, like they're out there on their own in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
They don't have a phone or whatever. And where are they going to go? They don't have any money. You know, what is this going to look like? But I also know from my own experience, even though I didn't end up in treatment, I had to lose everything.
Yeah.
So I had to have, you know, everything taken away from me, and I had to have no other choice to be able to stop. And sometimes I have to look at it like this is the end for them.
Yes.
You know, it's sink or swim time. Yeah. And then maybe you just need a little bit more. And that's what, I don't know what that is. I don't know when somebody's done is done, and why some people take longer, have to have more tries. I have no idea.
Yes. Yeah,
but if you're not ready, you're not ready.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter.
Exactly. If you need more, I used to, that group I was in, they used to always say more research.
Right.
Which is a very nice way of saying you need more pain.
Yep.
Yeah.
Right. You obviously need more pain before you're going to be willing to let go of that thing. Because, like, I was just like you, where my entire life was consumed by alcohol. you know, where it was, how am I going to get it? I remember, you know, I could have like 30, right? But there still wasn't enough because I'd be like, okay, so that this is going to last me this long and now I'm going to need more. And to break out of that cycle requires an enormous amount of pain. And it's a shame that it does. But like you said, who knows why and when that's going to happen for them. But at least we give the opportunity.
Right.
That's all we can do.
And I like what you said about the continuing growth that has to happen.
Yes.
You know, like
right.
you have to reach a pain threshold in order for the ego to die, to be willing to learn how to listen, right, yeah. to these suggestions.
Right.
But that's just the first step in that journey. Mm-hmm. And I really liked what you said about how some of us, you know, are stuck, you know, back when we really began our addiction. Like when it comes to relationships, I mm-hmm. still feel like I'm a 13-year-old, like emotional retard.
Oh,
yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like
it is hard.
I have no idea how to be in a successful sexual or even like personal relationship. Like,
yeah.
And it takes a long time to learn how to do these things that normal people learned when they were teenagers.
Yeah. You know? Or in their early 20s. I know for me, it was huge to realize I can really like a woman and I don't have to like fall in love with her or date her, you know, because that had always, because it was like I was a teenager, right? If I liked you, well, then now we have to go on a date or I have to start writing poetry or something, you know? But, you know, to just have like some normal feelings, be like, no, I'm attracted to this person and they're really cool, but I don't have to date them.
Right.
Yeah. It's cool. Yeah. And like you said, I think I was definitely stuck as a teenager because that's when I started drinking, you know?
Yep. All those experiences that form normal people.
Yeah.
We missed out on.
Yeah. Right.
At least I did.
But. Yeah. I think we all did to a certain extent.
Yeah.
No, yeah, absolutely. The one part of your story that a lot of people will, you know, it'll resonate with a lot of people is that when they, you know, started drinking or doing drugs or whatever it is, right? It felt like they found a solution, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
And it's interesting that, you know, because we know that this disease of addiction, if you choose to, you know, believe that it's a disease, either way you slice it, it's bad.
Right.
That it's very progressive, right? So you go from a place where even if, you know, for some, like you said, for some it starts socially, right? And you don't even realize. So for those types of people, which I'm one of them, I didn't necessarily feel or acknowledge the fact that it was a solution. I was just like, oh, okay, cool. This is just something that, you know, is done, especially since I come from a family where, you know, that disease is prevalent. Right. So there's nothing really that sticks out about this thing that I'm doing. And I'm not doing it in a way, you know, I haven't fallen asleep in a ditch, but it didn't take long until some crazy stuff started happening.
Yeah.
Looking back, I can acknowledge and be like, yeah, that's not normal, you know?
Yeah.
And it was close enough to the very beginning.
Sure.
Because I remember my 15th year, as soon as my 15th the day of my 15th birthday, mm-hmm. that marked the beginning of the race.
Yeah. Oh,
because
wow.
Because I was toast that night. And, you know, at some point I'll like tell the whole story, you know,
sure,
on one
yeah,
of these
me too.
Podcasts, right? But I mean, it was, you know, some similar stuff. Oh, man, there was puke and like just sex that I don't remember and like all kinds of stuff was going
wow.
on that night. And then that continued basically every weekend.
Just on
for the rest of the year.
But that is interesting how some people, because I'm more like Don initially, like it fixed something.
Right.
And, you know, but for some people, it's more of a gradual deal, right?
Right.
Because of where they're at or for whatever reason, it doesn't immediately show up. But I look back now and I just remember this one time sticks out and I think, how did I not know I was an alcoholic? Everybody thought I was this really good kid. But I was drunk a lot of the times and all my neighbors would have me house sit. And I remember my parents were redoing part of our house and I had gone over to my neighbor's and I had taken a bowl of ice cream. And I just remember I had poured some kind of liquor. So I'm eating this ice cream with liquor in it, just watching my parents, you know, do some stuff and just being hammered. And nobody knew for years that I was drinking like all the time. Like I was drunk all the time. Mm-hmm. And it allowed me to do things that I didn't think I could do. I could talk to
right.
people. I could be sociable. But yeah, but I have friends who that's not how they started. You know, they weren't getting drunk like during the day at first. You know, it was just casual, but they could look back and see it. But at the time, it was more of an evolutionary thing to where they were like, oh man, I have a problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So, I mean, it's very gradual, and that's the tricky thing, right? Because, you know, it's kind of like people that achieve success, right? So there's this whole idea of overnight success. It kind of feels like overnight, once like it hits you, you have that when the fog clears a little bit and you're like, oh my, I'm an alcoholic.
Yeah.
Like all of a sudden, but it's not really that sudden. At least that's how it is for some people.
Right.
You know, that progressive nature, you know, it the way it is, you know, it just takes time for it to develop and develop into this monster. And by the time you realize it, I mean, it's kind of taken you.
Yeah.
You know, and so for some people, it's like that, which was, you know, my case. But, you know, for Dawn, it was completely different. And I've never even considered, you know, the fact that it can be that way. Like, you know, just immediately, like, bam, just things completely go crazy, you know, because it wasn't that way for me.
Yeah.
Now, so for at that point, that was the solution, right? But now, I mean, you've been sober for a while. You know, how long has it been now?
3 years.
3 years.
Yes.
That's awesome.
So you get to the end of your first year, right? This magical year that we talk about. I don't know who came up with this.
Yeah,
like, who came up with a year, right?
Well, a year is important, and I'll tell you why.
No, but why that number?
1 year, in the span of the first year, you're going to experience every reason you need to drink or use.
Right.
And you made it through all of those things.
Yes.
Interesting.
And didn't drink or use. So you made it through a New Year's Eve. You made it through a St. Patty's Day. You know, you made it through your birthday. All
that's
of
interesting.
These major things.
Yeah. That's very true.
That's true.
There's a lot of tests.
Yeah. Yep.
You know,
holidays
at different parts of your sobriety, right? As time goes by, you tested, you know, at different points with different types of tests, right? Because the holidays are a very hard one for a lot of people, right?
For sure.
Especially if you know, you come from a family where things are, you know, not great. Maybe there's not a lot of love, you know,
or you can't even go to your family,
or you can't even go, right?
Separated from your kids,
right?
I mean, it's especially hard for women if they're away from their kids.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a tough time of year. So you made it through all of those reasons to drink it.
That's interesting. I never really thought about it that way, but that makes complete sense.
Yeah.
So you're at the end of the year. What's the solution now, you know? I mean, you're not obviously not physically addicted anymore.
Right.
So how do you what does it look like? Unpack the experience of maintaining, you know, this sobriety that you've been building up, you know, for a year at this point.
So I think it's interesting for me to think about what you were just saying, Brad, about the holidays and making it through all these things. Because for me, that was like not a different day. You know, like I drank so much for so many years that Christmas, St. Patty's Day, like all, like it didn't matter. I usually didn't even know, you know, what was going on. And for me, I think the number one most important thing for maintaining my sobriety is putting at the forefront that I could always go back to where I was, you know, like just because I'm not physically addicted anymore does not mean that I'm cured of alcoholism. So, you know, I'm always really close to a drink. And if that doesn't mean through all the work that I've done, I've been able to, you know, kind of, I can be around alcohol. I can be around people who are drinking and it doesn't bother me. So I don't sit around and just be afraid of it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
But I have to know that there are choices I can make that would lead me back to it. And how we were talking about the progressiveness of alcoholism, I will go back to right where I left off.
Yeah.
Right.
So wherever that happened, I crossed this like imaginary line where I'll never be able to drink like a normal person again.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so I have to remember that, you know, and if a normal person had the consequences from drinking that I've had, you know, they would never want to drink again. So even when I have fleeting thoughts sometimes of, oh, a drink sounds good or, you know, whatever, seeing people on a patio, it's like, no, you know, like you're never going to have just a few drinks. You just won't. You're going to, you know, it's going to be mayhem.
Yep.
Right.
So that's one thing. And in doing that, what I mean to maintain that and remember that is, I'm active in a recovery community. I work with women who are new. And another important thing is, you know, we always talk about helping out newcomers, but there's also a lot of people who suffer who have some time.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not always just the newcomer being the most important person. You know, I also work with women who have had some time in sobriety, who are having a hard time. It took facing, like, the facts of my past and not wanting to run and hide from life anymore. So learning healthy coping mechanisms. getting away from that fight or flight mentality that I had my whole life. You know, if anything made me uncomfortable, I wanted to put my dukes up, or I wanted to like run and pull the covers over my head.
Right.
And so I have to learn, and I get to learn daily, how to be like right-sized in the world. You know, I have a tendency to think that I'm either the smartest, best person in the room, or the lowliest, like, piece of shit in the room.
Yep.
And that neither of those are true.
Right.
You know,
right,
so I have to be in the middle somewhere and respect myself and respect my opinion and my voice, but not too much, you know, which is my go-to in alcoholism, you know, just a little bit more of everything.
I really like that.
Yeah.
I think of it like a pendulum swing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can go from one extreme to the other.
Oh, sure.
And even with 3 years clean, right? It's like, if I'm paying such close attention to every single one of my actions and thoughts, I'm going to feel like a piece of shit.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like I can be that hard on myself still, or I can get so egotistical, and you guys call me pretty boy constantly doesn't help, right? You know, I can swing to both sides, and I'm just trying to reduce like the swings of that pendulum to find some sort of happy medium in my life.
Yeah.
So I like that.
Yeah, it really is about the happy medium, right? Mm-hmm. It's not, like you said, I like how you said that. I'm either the smartest guy in the room or the worst, and neither of those is true.
No.
Yep. Right?
Yeah.
No, it's just not.
I'm just another guy, you know, and just doing my thing. And I can't let anybody, like, you know, you can't let somebody walk over you.
Right.
But you also don't want to be walking over other people, even if it's just mentally.
Right.
That's, I used to walk around with that sense of, you know, no one is as good as me, you know, all the time. This is how I had to believe in order to survive in the world, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just not healthy, you know, and finding just healthy ways to deal with stuff, coping mechanisms, without having to run or fight.
Yep.
Yeah.
Life on life's terms.
Oh, yeah. So that's a good way to put it.
Yeah, absolutely. So what are those coping mechanisms?
Well, I think the first thing was that I had to realize the harm that I'd caused in my life and go back and try to fix it with people. And that's not to just go to people who I, you know, hurt terribly and say, I'm sorry, I was an alcoholic. It's amending my behavior and like changing who I am and how I live in the world. And it involves, you know, day to day coming up with, you know, past problems and past things that hurt me and facing them instead of trying to just bury everything, you know. Drinking helps me not feel.
Right.
And so when you stop drinking, all your feelings come back pretty hard.
Mm-hmm.
And you just don't know how to deal with them, you know, like you bury them and then they claw their way out. And so I have to look at my past and look at my part in the things that have gone wrong and understand that what's happened has already happened and whatever is coming is on its way.
Right.
And like today I'm okay. You know, I don't have to live my life regretting the past, and I don't have to fear the future. And a good way for me to do that is to help other people, you know, and I do that in my job and I do that in a recovery community. I remember being with my mom after my first AA meeting and just like bawling my eyes out about how I've never done anything that I'm proud of. Like, I don't have anything in my life that I've ever done that I feel good about. And I can't say that today, you know, like this experience, this horrible experience and getting put through the ringer has put me in a unique position to help other people.
Yeah.
And somebody who's an addict gets somebody else that's an addict so much more than anybody else would, you know, and you can go to these people and you can just kind of say that, you know, this is who I am and this is what I did. And then learn how to, you know, be in the world with that so you don't have to fight it all the time. Another thing for me is finding a higher power and having a relationship. I call my higher power God, and it's just kind of like a universal thing for me. And in that, I pray and I meditate, and that's how I maintain this relationship. I have a really strong like yoga and meditation practice, which is kind of a form of self-care, but also very spiritual for me. I love to be outside and I love to hike and I love to be by water. And that is to me how I find peace and how I feel close to God is in nature. So I have to do things that make me feel peaceful.
I have a question.
Sure.
So about what you're saying right now. So a lot of people have a hard time, you know, with this whole God, you know, concept, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, what was it like for you in the beginning? Did you have a hard time with it? And how did you navigate that? You know, how did you get to this place of contentment that you're at now?
I did not believe in God at all. When I first quit drinking and through all of my drinking, I was a pretty staunch atheist. I thought that it was all kind of, you know, the spaghetti monster in the sky. And if there is a God, he don't care about me.
Right. Y'all are sheep.
Right. Yeah, no way. I mean, I was around religion when I was young. It never clicked to me. I never got it. I never really believed it even as a child. I didn't believe that all these other people were going to go to hell.
Did you grow up in a house where there was, were your parents, like, you know, Catholic?
We were Lutheran, so we were, like, relaxed Catholics.
Mm. Okay.
We went to church on Sundays. I, like, went to catechism and all that stuff. Oof. But I still didn't, you know, I remember talking to a pastor at, like, 12 and being like, so everybody else is going to go to hell. Like, really? And he was like, yeah, if they don't believe. And I was like, no, not doing it. Don't believe it. Can't
free
be true.
Free thinker.
Yeah.
Free thinker at 12.
Right.
Fuck you, old man. Don't tell me what to do.
So I did have a little chip on my shoulder about it. And that's actually something that kept me away from AA for a long time.
Yeah.
Because I thought that it was, you know, like a Christian place that you went. And I wasn't going to be duped into Jesus. Yep. And
a lot of people feel that way.
Yeah, a lot.
I thought it was a cult.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I talk so much shit about AA. And I get it.
And I get it because of the public profile that it has, right? All the things that you're shown in movies and all these things.
Yeah.
I get why someone would think that.
And even your first few experiences, right? You all hug at the end and like.
Oh, yeah. When the first time a guy came over, I was in Texas. The first time I was like, what?
Yeah.
You know, I didn't hug people. Not men. Yeah. And now I'm a hugging fool. No, but that is funny. I remember being, because my experiences with, you know, watching it on TV and stuff, seeing the movies about this particular group that I went to, I never saw a step, right? They didn't talk about, here's an actual list of things that you need to do in order to stay sober. I thought you just went in, you're like, hey, I'm an alcoholic, and then you sat around and you talked about it, and then you were good.
Right.
And I'll never forget, like, the first time I went to a meeting and they read these steps and I'm like, are they serious?
Right.
You know,
it says, like, God four times.
Exactly.
In that thing.
Like, what does that even mean to, like, my will and my life? What?
Yep.
You know, and you want me to write down a list? Everybody? Are you serious?
Right.
No one wants to hear that. Nobody wants to listen to that.
Yep.
You know, and so it was very intimidating.
Yeah. I wasn't into it at all. And, but I had that gift of desperation.
Yeah.
You know, nothing else had worked, and I had gotten relief from alcohol, you know, like the want to drink constantly pretty fast, which was really surprising for me. So I wasn't like white knuckling it, but I knew I could always go back, and I believed enough to believe that other people believed, you know, so I guess I maybe got a little more agnostic, like, okay, yeah, like she definitely believes.
Yeah, and it's working.
And then I had a unique experience with a woman in one of the rooms, and she said to me, you know, maybe, just maybe, you don't know everything. Mm-hmm. And maybe, just maybe, the way that you've lived your life up to this point is proof that you don't know everything. And that kind of really hit me, you know, like, who am I to sit here and say absolutely not when this is the way I've lived my life, you know? And so that got me a little more into it, and I needed to have proof in my life for me to believe. I didn't just blindly say, okay, God. But what happened is it kept being a longer and longer time since I hadn't drank.
Right.
You know, and I mean, I drank almost daily for 20 years.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, I think maybe 3 or 4 days in between a drink, tops, max, if that. And all of a sudden, this was lifted. And little by little, I started feeling, you know, better and better. And then I had all these really crazy experiences. You know, like people call them God shots or whatever, but it was like so obvious that something was working in my life that I couldn't deny it. But it took work to do that. You know, it wasn't just like, okay, I believe.
Right.
It was these experiences over and over again in sobriety that were like, yeah, you know what, you're right. And had I had been able to fix myself on my own, I definitely would have.
Oh, for sure.
You know, and that's what it is more than anything else, I think, is not so much, you know, this God in the sky is a puppet master putting all these things in your life. You know, we have free will, we have free choice, but I could not fix myself no matter what. And, you know, I wanted to, I didn't want to live that way. I didn't want to be that person. You know, I tried different things. I tried all these things, you know.
Question real quick. So is there anything that sticks out as far as, you know, what you're talking about, these things that happened that, you know, definitely started to convince you that there was something else at play?
One big thing was, you know, one thing we do is we go and make amends to people, you know, where we had caused harm in the past. And I had a big long list. And one of them was a boss that I had when I worked in Boulder and I was living in Denver. And I couldn't remember his last name. But I had been really terrible to him. Ended up getting fired from that job and, like, going out in a blaze of glory. And I tried to find him on Facebook, and I, like, tried to look at mutual friends to think maybe I would, like, pop into him. And I couldn't find him, so I was like, well, I'm willing. Like, 3 days later, he moved into my apartment complex. I swear to God, carrying a box in my apartment complex in Denver.
And you're like,
from, like, 6-7 years before working in Boulder. And I was like, oh, my gosh, you know, like, what?
Okay.
Yeah, so that was one of them.
Okay.
And then I think another big, big one was I was walking. I was taking a walk during the day, and I was maybe, geez, 9, 10 months sober. And I just got this, like, rush of relief that I had never felt before. And, you know, for the first time in my life, I felt really at peace and just like, okay, you know, and I wasn't like shining or floating above the earth or anything, but I was just like, I haven't been like sitting around worrying about things for a minute now, you know, and I kind of like freaked out and I called a woman from my recovery community and she was like, yeah, that's called serenity, you know, and I had never felt that even before drinking, even as a kid, I never felt okay.
Right.
You know, and at peace.
I think that's a pretty consistent theme that I see working with other people, you know, is this not feeling okay, even as a child.
Yes.
You know, never feeling a part of, even around family, right?
Right.
Like, I can be in a crowded room and feel completely alone. Or
Right.
I use the analogy, it's like everybody else is like a complete puzzle, and I'm just like missing a couple pieces.
Right.
Yeah, that's just my experience.
Yeah, mine too. Yeah. You know, I think I never felt like I belonged anywhere. But, you know, when I was knee deep into whatever I was drinking, I was okay.
Yeah.
Right? I was okay right then. I could make friends. I had something in common with people. And, like, it did work for me, you know, for quite some time before it, you know, made me completely nuts.
So that experience, you know, the first time experiencing serenity, I can relate with as well.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
It's, and what's even cooler for me is like seeing that on a newcomer's face. Like if you're working with a sponsee, like seeing that relief, like that's a pretty cool experience.
It is.
You know,
it is.
Yeah. When one of those guys gets it.
Yeah. Like you're doing a four step with somebody and, you know, you help them see their part and resentment or allow them to help them see something from a totally new perspective that they had never thought of this before.
Yeah.
It just totally blows their mind.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely. It's I'm usually slow for when it comes to like really getting the whole, like, picture of why I'm doing something sometimes or why something happens, you know, in my life, right? It takes a little time for it to sink in. And I remember it was like that when, you know, I went through that journey of doing all those steps, right? And then when it finally hit me, I was like, wow, okay, now I get it all. Because until you go and do it, it's just like, I mean, I was willing, okay? I was waving the white flag. Just do something. Give me something, okay?
Yeah.
Something that's not what I had. And it just totally changed everything, especially some of the big, big, you know, problems that I had, that had to do with, you know, like just some of the stuff that happened when I was growing up, you know, my relationship with my parents, you know, and all these things. And I just remember, you know, you happen to know the guy I worked with and he's so straight up, man. He's one of those people that actually one of them's in the room. he'll get you to a place. If you're not ready, you know, you'll just be like, no.
Yeah.
And you'll try, you know, you're like, no, I'm not going through that, you know, I'm right. And that's all that there is to say about it, right? You know, but I listened to what he had to say, you know, and man, completely, you know, a game changer, right? Like, what's your part in things? Because that's it's kind of a trick, because, you know, they get you to be like, you sponsors, you know, will be like, yeah, you know what? So, you know, tell me, so what happened? Blah, 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 blah. Yep, okay, yep. Cool. Okay, now, what did you do?
Oh, it's like, I resent this person for, right. You know, well, they did this and they did that and that right. Made me do this. It's like, well, have you ever done that?
Right.
Like,
right,
it's those, exactly. It's those, yeah. Those questions, you know what right. I mean?
Yeah. Excellent.
Well, have you ever lied? Yeah. Right. Well, have you ever slacked off at work?
Sure.
Have you ever manipulated somebody into sleeping with you?
But I like how it's the presentation of a full picture. So while you have to acknowledge, because sometimes on my end, I was blaming myself too much. Right. Mm-hmm. In other areas, I wasn't taking enough responsibility. But looking at that honest picture through that that process, I think it's crucial. And then being able to just be like, okay, you know, I'm not perfect. I'm not the worst guy in the world.
Right.
I messed up here.
Yeah.
This one really wasn't my fault. And I've been carrying that around for a long time.
Right.
This over here.
Because that is a part of it too.
Yeah.
Letting go of stuff that, mm-hmm. you know, and you have to go through the process, right, to be able to even see where you can be like, okay, I'll let that go. That was not my fault, right?
Well, and it's interesting because when we talk about the God concept, you know, for years, you know, I studied philosophy in school and I really wanted to know what this was. And I had this one guy, I think he was like my second sponsor, and he just always asked me, and I was still in college at the time, chicken, was it the chicken or the egg? And I used to get so mad because I thought, well, he just doesn't get it. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until years later, and I joined a community that was like, it was the puppet version of God. You know, like, God has this plan, this specific thing, you got to do it like this, otherwise they're not in, and you're in, and this is it. And, you know, ultimately that didn't work either. And I had to get to this place where, you know what, I have no idea. I have no idea how it works, right? But if I apply spiritual principles to my life, things are okay. And letting go, like letting go of that need to know how everything works.
Yeah, I don't think I'm supposed to know.
Exactly.
If I was supposed to know,
that's
I
the
would.
Answer.
Exactly. That that is the answer. It's live your life.
Exactly.
Live your life and live it well, and let the things take care of themselves that are supposed to. And if he needs you to do something, or she needs you to do something, or however you envision, you know, your version of the Almighty, you'll know.
Right.
Those situations will occur. Like, you're like, I'm willing. And then you see that person like 3 days later and you're like, oh, okay.
Yep.
So something, I don't know how that works. How is it possible that this man's life was planned out in such a way that 7 years later he would be in a position, you know what I mean? Like, you could lose your mind thinking about that kind of stuff.
Oh, right. For sure.
But what we know is it works, right?
Definitely works.
That's what's amazing about it.
Works.
And that's how you know that it's a power greater than yourself, because I can't explain it.
Right.
Yeah. And if I could, it wouldn't be greater than me, so.
No, right. I think an important thing to say is, even though I can accept that I'm not supposed to know what it is, that doesn't mean I don't have to continue to seek it.
Right.
You know, because I can give so much of this energy to newcomers or other people, right?
Right.
That if I'm not taking in some form of energy, then I get burned out.
Yes.
You know, so I have to continue to keep this channel open.
Yeah.
You know, and there's a number of ways that you can do that, whether it's prayer or meditation or yoga or
being in nature, right? Yeah, I get that, you know, like that. It's continued gratefulness, you know, in a way for me. Just every once in a while, just stopping and being like, I am not drunk. I haven't even thought about drinking. I actually enjoy everything that I'm doing, even the hard work that I'm doing. My life is going really well.
Yeah.
And then you're like, okay, now let's keep moving. But just that moment of like, everything's okay. Like serenity. You're like, I am not freaking out at the right now. I'm not scared of going and talking to that person. I used to be afraid of like just checking out at a checkout counter, right? And I couldn't let anybody know. But it was terrifying for me just to walk up and talk to a stranger to buy a pack of gum.
Right.
And that didn't even happen. Like, it's not even a thing anymore. Mm-hmm. But it was for such a long time. And just that realization of like, oh, okay.
Yep.
And that, and then all of a sudden you're good to go. But then the meditation and just being grateful, it's crucial. Yeah. And I like how everybody's journey is a little bit different. And that's what's cool about the community that we're in. There's nobody going like, you have to read page 732 and recite this. I mean, there's a couple things that we all do.
Yeah. Right? If somebody tries to tell you it has to be a certain way, you go tell them to fuck themselves. All right.
Exactly.
Yeah. I'm dead serious. It even says in the book that we all fucking read, like,
yeah,
these other concepts, you know what I mean?
There's and there's suggestions. It even says in there.
Exactly.
This is a course of action which is suggested.
Yep.
Yeah.
This is not a cure-all for alcoholism.
Like, right.
You still need to have outside sources for growth and spirituality.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Absolutely. There's building blocks, man. It's not just one thing.
Well, and I like how now even, you know, modern behavioral science has identified some things that really helped me to know,
mm-hmm,
right, as far as how, you know, we're creating channels within our brain that we've reinforced for years.
Yep.
And the cognitive part of our brain gets kind of shut out by the lizard part,
mm-hmm,
that doesn't really think anything beyond the moment, right? And, you know, knowing those kind of things. Now, that in of itself, self-knowledge never fixed me. But that in addition, it allowed my brain to, like, wrap around something when it needed to. I don't know. It's just kind of interesting how it all works together now.
Do you read, Dawn?
I do read, yes.
I read a ton. And I hadn't read a book in 10 years when I got here. And now I read 2-3 books a week.
Yeah.
That's great.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's impressive. So, 2-3 books, huh?
Yeah.
It's about average. I listen to books because, mm-hmm, I mean, half a page into reading and I'm out. I don't know what it is. I have tried and tried and tried and it hasn't changed.
Hmm.
At some point, I mean, I tried all kinds of different things, but it just hasn't changed. But I haven't given up. But for now, listening is... No, that's how I do that.
Hey.
You know, it's interesting. I love to read. And I don't know if it's breaking patterns or whatever. And I used to read all the time. Like, I was like you.
Mm-hmm.
I made it a mission to read as many books as I could.
Yep.
And lately, like the past couple of years since I've been sober, I have not read as much. Hmm. Like, not that I haven't read, not that I haven't enjoyed a good book, but it's not an all-consuming passion like it was. So I wonder if it has something to do with, like, just changing of patterns.
Yeah.
Oh, for sure.
You know?
I don't read nearly as much as I used to, when I first got here.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I mean, that was all I did.
Yeah, exactly.
Was read books.
And especially at early recovery, yeah.
Oh, I was just so fascinated with everything.
Yeah.
You know, I just wanted to learn.
That's fascinating. Oh, so it was mainly nonfiction?
Mostly. But I read tons of fiction, too.
Huh, interesting.
Okay, do you have a book you'd like to recommend, actually? A self-help book? Something that, like, sticks out that really helped you in the process of, you know, well, now or even in early sobriety?
I really liked The Power of Now, Eckhart Tolle, mm-hmm, book. I reread that probably once a year.
Okay.
That's just something that has taught me a lot about, like, being here now, being in the moment.
Right.
You know, kind of stopping that monkey brain that's running all around and telling me I need to, you know, regret calling somebody the wrong name for 3 months and, like, get all scared about things. And it's just, you know, it has helped me a lot in realizing how much other people's actions don't define me,
mm-hmm,
you know, and, like, I am who I am. And, you know, maybe bad things that have happened in the past or the way that people are reactionary has nothing to do with me.
Yeah.
You know, everybody's on their own journey.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It's helped me a lot with being able to accept people exactly where they are, you know,
sure,
like, and that is love. That is, that doesn't mean, you know, I want to fix people. I want to change people, which is, especially in this job, is so hard.
Oh yeah.
You know, but I don't know everything and everybody is exactly where they are. And we need to love and accept, like, what that means. And it's, you know, all about really not taking things personally, which I think is huge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. Nice. I just thought I'd ask that question.
Oh, that's
a great question.
Yeah,
since he mentioned that.
Right.
I definitely thought, you know, I should ask. So, you know, just to kind of recap, we've talked about your healthy coping mechanisms, right? And we've also talked about, you know, the spirituality component. What is there anything else you'd like to, you know, maybe mention before, you know, you conclude?
I mean, I think that pretty much covers it. I could probably go on talking for another hour about myself.
Okay.
Which I wouldn't have a problem with. But
if there's anyone that should be able to, it's you.
Right.
Yeah. If you think we're good to go, then, you know, that's great. Yeah. So Let me see here. Now, I think I really like what you wrote. I'm reading your notes here, and there's the conclusion part of it, right? You want me to read it?
Sure.
So in conclusion, she says, maintaining long-term sobriety for me is not a matter of trying really hard or having the willpower not to drink. It involves a whole new design for living and is something I will have to put first for the rest of my life. Being active in a recovery community has taught me that it is very easy and always possible to return to my addiction, no matter how long I have abstained. I've seen it happen to so many people. I need to do more than abstain. I need to work towards growing in understanding and effectiveness every day.
Exactly. Oof. That's powerful stuff.
Love it.
Good. Yeah. I love it. Because that I love that. The idea of continual growth.
Yes.
Right. Continual growth.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I think if you hit it on the nail on the head, right, I could tomorrow, right, any of us, right, we could have 20 years. 20 years from now, make a couple bad decisions, allow ourselves to get into that place.
Right.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. So you have to continually grow.
Resting on your laurels.
Yes.
Which I think is why it's so interesting to me that people who suffer from addiction and who have recovered become these amazing people, because they know I can't stop growing.
Right.
And so, right. You do that for 20 or 30 years and you continually become a more effective person, you're going to be a powerhouse, right?
Yeah.
And you see that, and it's interesting. I love it.
Yeah, yeah. I totally see that. You know, I will say that sometimes I question why I do the things that I do. And I do this, we always do, we try and take inventory of ourselves, right? And really stay aware. Because if you lose that awareness, it's very easy for little things, because it's all in the details, right? For things to happen, and next thing you know, you're in a really bad spot, right?
Yeah, true.
And so, like with, you know how much I work, right? I'm always working on something. You know, I'm working on my personal growth. I'm working on, I'm doing this now. There's my job, which is, it's really taxing. And so sometimes I have to stop and I'm like, okay, why am I doing this? Mm-hmm. And especially in recently, because, my grandpa died, and I'm like, am I trying to find an out? You know what I'm saying? I'm trying to find a way to block.
Yeah, my covering.
Block my pain, right? Because I need, it's important for me to process and to go through the grieving, process, especially after, someone that close to me has died. Mm-hmm. And so there were a lot of questions when, at the beginning of the year, I came back from, Africa. I went to bury my grandpa. I was like, should I, continue this thing that I started doing? Because, it was in honor of him. And he's inspired the whole thing, right? And so I just think it's really interesting to find myself, in a place like this where, sometimes doing the right thing, you have to be careful with that also. And I've heard people say that, right? Because doing the next best thing doesn't necessarily mean that you're doing, the right thing. Because you could be thinking, it's like you said, you don't want to, start doing groups and doing all of that because you would feel like, you don't need to go to meetings anymore, right? And you're doing the right thing by helping other people,
right?
But you're not necessarily doing right by yourself, right? And so it's easy to kind of fall or find your place in this, in this place where, you can get lost.
You continually, and one of the steps is that continually looking at myself. And usually with the help of people around me sometimes, all of us, I can fool myself.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And so good at that.
Yeah. Even when I'm taking inventory and I'm thinking, why am I really doing this?
Right.
Is this something that I really wanted to do? Like we were talking before the show about, just because I'm in this field doesn't necessarily mean that I need to move on in this field, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
So really taking assessment of that. But yeah, continually staying in that place where I'm questioning my own motives and then talking to someone else.
Right.
Like, what do you think about this? And finding somebody who is willing to be like, well, this is exactly what I think, regardless of how you feel about it.
Right.
This is what it looks like to me. So just so you know that.
Yeah.
And then that allows me to sort of overcome in a way that self-deception that I lived in for so many years.
Right. Yeah. Alcoholism turned me into like a pro liar.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
And, oh, man. I just
you have to be.
Right. It's a surviving.
Never truthful about anything.
And even to ourselves.
And now, that's where it is. It's in my head.
Yeah, but that's why. And they talk about intelligent people, right? And how they can stay in addiction so long, because you BS your way out of every time the fog clears a little bit, you'll find a way to just convince yourself. No.
Right. Right. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. I'm always lost, man. You know what I mean? Like, there's no, oh, I got this. Like, it's a constant motion of going up and down and like crawling up the hill and then slipping back down because I'm lazy and I don't want to do this shit.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to call somebody every day and tell them how I'm pissed at somebody at work or, you know what I mean? How my life is, you know, still kind of messy. Like,
You want to be able to say everything is great.
It's hard realizing how petty we can be. I think that's my big thing.
I think that could be a whole like episode, pettiness.
Right.
But like resting on your laurels, like I can, it's not until I start to feel the pain, right, that I recognize that I'm not doing what I'm supposed to be doing. Like, it's all about that pain. It's, and I've gotten better. It's like those pendulum swings, right?
Right.
At recognizing when I'm falling off that path.
Right.
You know, because I can recognize the signs when I'm not feeling super connected and I start feeling agitated towards people who I really shouldn't be agitated with.
Right.
You know,
right,
when I start getting super resentful at somebody over nothing, like, it's time for me to pause and be like, well,
what's really going on?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it makes us, I think addiction makes us really good at being uncomfortable too. You know, so I was so uncomfortable for so long that now I can settle into that uncomfortableness pretty easily.
About that, you know,
like this doesn't bother me. You know, I'm just uncomfortable. Just
put my head down and
right.
You know,
and that's not where the growth happens. You know, and growth does happen in uncomfortableness, but you got to get out of it.
Yeah, not just hanging out there. That's true.
I think there's definitely two different types of discomfort. You know, one when you start to recognize it, it's a good thing. In early sobriety, I remember there was a point when every time I did something that made sense, I was very uncomfortable and I would really stop and be like, okay, what's going on? Why am I feeling this way? And then when I assess the situation, I'm like, oh, I'm not used to doing the right thing. That's why I'm uncomfortable, right? Then I'm like, okay, cool. So now I know like what that looks like. And going forward, I was able to be like, okay, fine. If it's that kind of discomfort, good. Go right into it. Obviously be aware. You know, just do what you have to do, you know? And so, I mean, just like we're talking about this, you know, things aren't as black and white as, you know, as we'd like to think they are, or as we previously thought they were.
As I want them to be.
As we would like them.
I still want there to be some formula, right? Like if you do this in the morning and this at lunch and then this at night, then that equals happiness.
Yeah, you're good.
Yeah. Like I want to figure out that formula.
Oh, I know.
And I know that it doesn't exist.
Right.
I just still sometimes wish that it did.
I find myself thinking that delusional thought, if this were in my life, then everything would be great. And then that happens and you're like, everything's still not great. How come? Because it's not a thing, right? Yeah. It's a way of being.
It's like my immediate thinking. So I was talking to somebody that we both know.
Yeah.
And he's telling me this story about this this serene moment that he experienced, right? Where he's drinking coffee with a new roommate out on the patio. And, you know, it's just a beautiful scene downtown, right? And he found himself just like very, very happy in that moment. Mm-hmm. And as an addict, my first thought is, okay, well, now I need to have coffee with my roommate tomorrow morning to get that same feeling, right?
That's funny. That's not how it works, right?
But like, that's how my mind works.
Right.
It's like, as soon as I get something that feels good, I want to repeat that process.
Right.
That's how we got here, man.
I know.
That's how we got here. You know what I'm saying? Identifying something and going, oh, that works. So let's just do it until it doesn't work. Right.
But it's hard to identify when it's not, when there aren't consequences to doing that action, right? Like when I use drugs, there's pretty significant consequences like that I've learned.
Right.
There's no significant consequence to having coffee with a fucking roommate on the patio.
No.
But anytime I'm seeking happiness and serenity outside of myself, like that's me grasping on to something to make me happy. And I know where that leads.
Yeah,
you know, these are those addictions outside of drugs and alcohol that I'm trying to work on now. Women is number one.
Yeah. You know what I find interesting? I find that in that moment where I'm totally serene and everything seems perfect, it's as if my higher power is like, okay, cool. time for the next step. And then something will happen to totally throw me out of that, right? I'll think everything is great. And then something will happen where I'm forced to kind of like be back in that place where everything is not great. How are you going to deal with this, right? Everything was great. Everything was right here. And now, bam, something happens because, you know, you can't stay settled. And no. I don't know. I find that those, and so now when I'm in that, it's like totally certain, I'm like, everything is perfect. That's when I'm like, okay, just be okay in that moment, but also know there's still challenges, right? It's there's still things. Last. Exactly.
And that's okay.
That perfect moment is amazing, but there's still, you're going to go back to your house and somebody's going to have broken something or, you know, something's going to happen. Can you maintain that same sense of well-being in the face of life on life's terms?
Right.
Sure.
You know, I always find that that's what's happening around the corner in that moment.
Yeah, that's what the toolbox is for.
Exactly.
You know, just kind of working, you know, to discover yourself, who you are now, you know, how to deal with those things, you know, just all of these things, you know, that's why you have to go through a process.
Absolutely.
Now, it's different. It looks different for everyone, right?
Yeah, everybody, because yeah.
I'm still baffled. You know, I'm very curious about how Don did it. You know, I only know my method, right? I went to rehab and right? I was just like,
ah. Fix me.
And they didn't even say, come on in immediately. They were like, oh, yeah? Wait, hold on.
I don't know about this fucking guy.
Let's talk for a minute. Guy?
Yeah, hopefully we get the lady that, you know, helped many of us at this table.
Oh, ooh, yeah. I really hope she
we really want
on,
to
yeah.
get us. I want to get her in here so she can kind of talk to us. The gatekeeper, man. Our friend.
I still remember calling her from the hospital bed.
Yeah.
You know? Dude, I mean, can you imagine what it's like to be Christy, man?
To get those calls all day?
All yes. day.
Like, oh, not man. Just from the people themselves, but from their family members,
sure.
too.
Sure.
Yeah. Right, right, like, right.
Please, 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 please.
You know what? We'll find out soon
yeah,
enough.
Yeah, she'll eventually all right. come on.
Now, in closing, great. I want to ask a question. If you would give, in your opinion, what are the three things? Because I've gotten calls from like, you know, family members and just people in, you know, in my life. They're like, you know, I think so-and-so has a real problem. You know, can you help this and that, whatever, you know. If you get that call, what do you say? You don't have to do three things, but, you know, just you know, what would you say to that person if you got that call? Like, you know, oh, so-and-so is really in a bad way, you know, talk to them.
I would tell them, you know, first of all, that addiction's not a moral failing, you know, like it's a disease. I believe that it's a disease. And it's not because we weren't loved enough or we don't love enough or they don't love you enough.
Right.
They have lost the power of choice. You know, like they're not choosing to live this way. They just can't help it. And that does not negate the harm that they caused, that we caused, that I caused. Mm-hmm. It's not okay. You know, this person's sick. That doesn't make it okay. But I think the number one thing, I mean, I grew up with addiction in my house, both my parents, multiple family members, is that we really want to control things when we're around that because it's so out of control. Mm-hmm. And this is something that you just can't control, which is a horrible thing to think about, you know. So I'd want them to know that, you know, it's not because they don't love you enough to stop. And I think another important piece of that is they have to be ready to be done.
Yep.
You know, I have to be ready to be done. Nothing else is going to talk me into it or change it.
Right.
I have to be ready to be done. And sometimes that means taking everything away from them. You know, like you hear a lot about, you know, although they're still paying their rent or they're still doing this or they're still doing that. You know, I mean, I would say if somebody in your life is an active addiction, you need to cut them off. Financially in any way that you can. That does not mean that you stop loving them or you right. don't say I'm here for you if you need help. Yep. But you can't support other people's habits.
Right.
It takes losing everything sometimes, you know, to be able to make a change.
Yeah.
Excellent. Yep. Excellent. Yeah,
it's super good advice.
Yeah. I mean, I said the same part, some of the same things, you know, especially the part where, you know, they have to get to a place where, you know, the fog clears. Because even if I'm to try and share, you know, suggestions or anything with someone, right?
Yeah.
Unless, you know, they're lucid enough for some of that to get through.
Right.
Yeah.
It doesn't make a difference. Second of all, you know, they have to want to do that, you know,
yeah.
themselves.
Yeah.
So I think that's great, really, really great advice or a great suggestion.
Yeah, I think another thing, you know, probably right away, I would say is if they want help, tell them to call me. Okay. You know, like have them reach out.
Right.
Do they want this?
Right.
You know, because if they don't, it's really sad, but there's no way around it, you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, so, you know, in closing, I'd say, you know, that's, I really like what you said there. If for whatever, you know, reason you're not comfortable with, you know, calling Dawn or, you know, calling Brad or getting in touch with us, there's definitely resources out there. Feel free. I mean, everyone knows about, you know, the program of AA. We're not, you know, representing them, but you can definitely find a way to, you know, make your way to, you know, to a meeting, because I know that loneliness is part of it, right? And I remember when I was taken by my mother to my very first meeting, and it really was instrumental in, you know, the whole process of healing. It actually changed everything. Just getting in that room, because I'd intended on going myself, but every time I did that, next thing I knew, I was, you know, halfway into a bottle. And I'm like, you know what? I respect this. I don't know what this thing is about, but I respect it enough to not show up as I am now.
Yeah.
You know, and so I never went, you know. So
they'll come and get you sometimes. That's what happened for me. Oh, yeah? I caught up and they're like, where do you live? Yeah. We'll be there.
There's a phone number too. Yeah. Most of the programs have a phone line.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that you can call 24 hours a day.
Okay. And you know what? So thanks for saying that. I wasn't aware about that, but we'll definitely, you know, we'll put that in the description of of the episode. And no matter what it is, you know, that's going on, you know, just reach out. It's very important that you do that. You know, should you feel that that's the thing that you want to do.
I did want to say to all of our listeners that, so this, we're going to make this a two-part episode.
Yeah.
So we'll be ending this part and this will be, a release. And then we're going to continue with the second part where the lovely Brad is, going to be presenting his story. Dawn's still going to be with us. So we're going to talk about kind of the same things where Brad has, you know, a different journey and we want to hear what he has to say. And we do hope that you will, stay tuned.
Absolutely. Well said. With that, we're going to end this episode. My name is Adrian.
My name is Aaron.
My name is Dawn.
And
my name is Brad Pitt.
I was really hoping you said that. I was cheekily sitting here just smiling. I was going to say it. I was like, you know what? Knock it off. All right. No, he's not Brad Pitt.
No, definitely not.
But he is Brad. He's going to be in the next episode. Again, if you would like to reach us, you can do so at www.theteach.com or on Facebook.
Facegroup.
Facegroup.
So he threw me off. I wanted to laugh. I'm still not used to it. Or you can reach us on Facebook or Instagram at TWOTEACHONE. All right. So with that, we're going to end this episode. And next week, Brad.
Good night, everyone.